So I've asked this question before, which is BRCA the new MSI or the new NTRK? And Johanna gave a good example with BRAF, where you don't see the same thing in colon cancer as you do in melanoma and lung cancer for that matter. We're already hearing some differences in how people respond. I don't even have a really good feeling for how effective PARP inhibitors are in these three, and let's bring in ovary as well. They're studying different ways. Ovary is like maintenance after platinum. First of all, do you think you can begin to look at BRCA as sort of like an MSI? In other words, tumor nonspecific? And what are the key elements and whether somebody's going to clinically respond? We know that.
The short answer is I would say yes. And fortunately, these mutations, at least in some of the common epithelial tumors, are very much more prevalent than NTRK or IDH1 mutations, let's say. The challenge is that we may have shot ourselves in the foot in the way that we have designed these studies in, tumor type specific indications. Whereas if we had at the very beginning done a basket trial, let's say, for any histologic type with a pathogenic BRCA1, 2, and then they got PARP inhibitor and objective response was the primary endpoint, then you could have envisioned a tumor type agnostic approval. But we have not done that, and I'm not aware of any studies that are doing that.
I mean, do you have any sort of intuitive sense if you were to compare these three cancers, and let's bring in ovarian cancer, sort of pound for pound, how a BRCA germline patient would respond to a PARP inhibitor in all those diseases?
I would say generally yes, and I would add pancreatic cancer to that list as well.
Sure, of course. But you think that, for example, a patient with pancreatic cancer kind of inherently has the same sensitivity to PARP inhibitor as a patient with ovarian cancer?
Well, I don't treat those other cancer types, but if I had to give you my, my best guess, I would say that, and this is going to be a pure guess, across cancer types, I think about 40 to 50% will have some type of benefit, and the benefit on average would last somewhere in the 6 month range to 9 month range.
Do you have any, as long as you're postulating things, it's really interesting when we go to a general medical oncology audience and we present a BRCA germline breast cancer case, the most common answer is platinum followed by PARP maintenance, even though it's never been studied in breast cancer. But they like that model, that concept. Do you have any sense about what the best way is to utilize these agents? Should it be as monotherapy or as maintenance after platinum, for example?
Well, I'd love to hear Ion's point, but in prostate cancer, we kind of got lucky because we don't use platinum in this disease.
Right.
So when these PARP inhibitors were developed, a lot of people said, "Well, this is just an expensive platinum," i.e., do we really need to give a drug that's going to probably cost $10,000 a month, or can we just give carboplatin to these patients? Well, that hypothesis has never been proven, but I think in other cancer types where both drugs are FDA approved and commonly used, my experience talking to my colleagues is that there is definite cross resistance between platinum agents and PARP inhibitors. The most striking evidence of that are these so-called reversion mutations, which are also called restoring mutations. And this is one of the most fascinating things in biology that happens is that the mutant form of the gene converts back to wild type under the selective pressure of the PARP inhibitor therapy or the platinum therapy. And what is going to blow your mind even more, Neil, is that this can happen even when the first hit is a germline mutation. So you can have a germline BRCA2 mutation in a breast cancer patient. You give that patient a PARP inhibitor, they respond for 9 months, they develop a secondary resistance. You take a biopsy of the resistant clone and you sequence that gene, and that gene is wild type, it's back in frame.
So what has happened?
What has happened is that, one of the clones in that tumor has developed a mutation that restores the function of BRCA such that synthetic lethality is no longer applicable.
Oh.
So that cell is no longer synthetic lethal with a PARP inhibitor.
Incidentally, before Ian comments, is there any interest in looking at platinum agents again now in prostate? If you go back, is it, look just at the 25%? Would you see something different?
So in 2009, Kåre Sternberg and Oliver Sartor did a study with an oral a platinum
Right.
agent called satraplatin.
Right, I remember that.
And it's a fascinating study. It was published in JCO, and then the drug company went out of business because it was negative. 15 to 20% of patients had a profound response to this oral platinum.
Huh.
That was in the days where we were not even thinking about genomic testing. So I've always said to Oliver and Kåre, if we had done that study now and we had selected the HR deficient patients, maybe done a head-to-head comparison, olaparib versus satraplatin, both drugs might have been equivalent.
Wow, interesting. That's
pure speculation.
Ion, any comments?
No, I think this is actually a very topical discussion now about, you know, in breast, we did our trials of PARP monotherapy versus chemotherapy. They're quite active. You know, the response rate is about 60% for both drugs with, you know, good progression-free survivals and, you know, relatively good tolerability. But, you know, we see the very impressive data they're getting in ovarian cancer with maintenance therapy. And there's a real interest in potentially trying to test that approach in breast cancer because, again, we took this trial approach because it was straightforward of just, you know, chemo versus PARP. But it doesn't mean that it's the optimal way to do it. And I think there's real interest now in going back, now the drugs are approved, and looking to see whether we can get further benefit from that. So I think it's a very reasonable strategy. It just needs to be tested. And as you're right, I mean, I think in the community, people are doing different things, how they're sequencing platinums versus PARP. And there is a real potential for negative effects because of these reversion mutations and other resistance mechanisms. So I think it would be really helpful to have definitive data so that we're doing it the best we can for the patients rather than just do it empirically.
And, you know, we're not talking much today about pancreatic cancer, but as you mentioned, you know, PARP's very much on the table. And there, from what I'm hearing from investigators, the trial is a little bit complicated really because of the chemotherapy and because they get upfront platinum, you know, FOLFOX as part of their upfront therapy, or FOLFIRINOX more likely. And the problem that the GI people have is there was no arm that where they used chemotherapy maintenance. So it kind of, you know, didn't ask the critical question. What are you doing nowadays about BRCA testing and PARP and pancreatic cancer?
I mean, we test for it for pancreatic cancer patients and more because it might define what we're going to use in our first-line therapy, where we would want to include a platinum as part of first-line therapy. But I think that the question that's been alluded to is the PARP, just an expensive oral platinum. There are some arguments, the people that are pro-PARP in the maintenance setting for the patients with BRCA pancreatic cancer say, well, it's a quality of life issue. It's being able to put somebody on oral agent. It's less toxic than FOLFIRINOX, potentially in FOLFOX. And that's why that we would use it. But we never actually look to see and compare versus chemotherapy that if you just continue the platinum agent, would those patients do better than the PARP inhibitor? I think for pancreas cancer patients in particular, we see the PARPs work, but the PARPs seem to have less activity than they do in other tumor types. Again, pancreas cancer is the hard one. It's very heterogeneous. There's a lot of issues with the microenvironment, a lot of different contributing factors, which may play a role in the fact that PARPs don't seem to be as active, but we still have to figure out why.